Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And welcome and good morning. My name's Harry Miller.
And good morning. My name is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys with the Estate Planning and Medicaid Planning Group at the Herzog Law Firm. We have four convenient offices located in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, Albany at Corporate Woods, and in Kingston, New York. And we are here each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock to talk to you, answer your phone calls and your questions, and try to bring you some helpful, interesting, and entertaining information about the world of estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, Medicaid applications, qualifications, and all those good things and more. So if you would like to talk to Jane Marie and I during the hour here, you are free to call us here at 518-476-5900. That's the number here in the studio, 518-476-5900. Before we get going, though, I gotta let our listeners know. Yesterday I had lunch with the guy who actually founded the radio show here in Albany, Shalom Koplowitz. Judge Shalom Koplowitz was in town yesterday. I had a lovely lunch with him yesterday.
I'm surprised you didn't bring him in this morning.
Well, he actually was on his way to his 60th college reunion at Hamilton College this week.
Oh, wow.
And actually, it's his 62nd, but it was supposed to be 2 years ago, which was actually his, I think, graduated in 1960. It was 2020, but because of the virus prohibition, they had to put it off for 2 years.
How many people show up to a 62nd?
Probably 8 or 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably a small amount.
It's probably a dwindling, you know, he looks good. He really, I mean, those of you out there who remember Shaw, now, I've got to tell you, I don't even know if Jane Marie knows. Shaw, she may have known him by reputation.
Right, that's right.
Because at the time she was not with the law firm. He's probably retired about 15 years ago, I think. And but he actually started this radio show back around 1979 or 1980 the studio was down the hall. It was, down the hall in the bigger studio then. In those days, we used to go down there. We had a lot more room to spread out and stuff like that. But it was seriously called Ask the Judge, And I won't even tell you the theme song that he played, but it was fun. And Sheldon at one time had been a judge. He was a police court judge in Cahos. Okay.
And that made him the
Not
judge.
Not exactly the appellate division of Court of Appeals, but he's a good guy. And he did ask me to, any of you listeners out there who remember Shalom, I'm sure there's many of you out there who do, he sends his best, his love to you all, and wishes you all a wonderful time.
That was nice.
I thought I would let you know about that. He was
going Who picked to- up the tab? Did he pick up the tab?
Or yes, he did.
He did.
He actually sent me an email. He said, meet me at blah, blah, blah. I won't say, he said, leave your wallet at home.
That's nice.
I said, it's typical Shalom. He used to.
Which is great because that would make it that I would order the most expensive thing.
I said, in that case, I'll have the surf and turf and have a cocktail,
There you go. Why not? That's right. Don't go back to work. It's all good.
Well, that's good to hear because I have a lot of our long-standing clients who always ask me, how's he doing? Is he still around? what's going on?
He is. He lives in Florida. He and his wife live in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And he was up this weekend, and I think what they typically do in the hot summer months, July and August, and they rent a house up in Vermont or something for a couple of months and get out of the heat and humidity of Florida, and then they'll head back down there in September.
Nice.
October.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
nice.
I wanted to talk before we go on too much. I had an interesting experience this week involving safe deposit boxes. Those of you who have safe deposit boxes, they can be a royal pain to get into. Not only when someone passes away, but even when someone is still alive. In this experience, the client called me. Actually, the client's power of attorney called me. the client is in a nursing home. She's been in a nursing home for 2 years, okay? And she has long-term care insurance. So, you know, they're paying the bill and stuff like that. So, and she's, you know, financially okay. So the power of attorney calls me up. She went to a bank, who will remain unnamed, with her power of attorney, and they told her, oh, I'm sorry, you can't get into the safe deposit box because she didn't sign the power of attorney card at the safe deposit box. You know, they have their own little registry
right.
of cards mm-hmm. that do sign.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't exactly sign it because she's like, she can't, we can't bring her in because
right.
she's in a nursing home. Oh, well, then we can't let you in the box. The client calls me. Here's the reason she needed to get into the box. The client has a number of shares of a company that they need to sell, and they have certificates. A lot of people don't have them. They don't issue certificates anymore. This particular client, because she's elderly, she had a whole bunch of stock certificates in her safe deposit box that had to be sent back to the company because they were reissuing new certificates. All right? So she wanted to take care of her business, which is what she's supposed to do as her power of attorney. So she calls me and says, I know what to do. I can't get in the box. I can't obviously get her. I can't bring her from the nursing home. I have the power of attorney. So I said, let me see what I can do. So I called up the branch manager, okay, at the branch bank, lovely person. And I had a little conversation with her, and I said, look, here's the situation, this and that. She said, well, does the power of attorney that you have allow her to go to the safe deposit box? And I said, yes, it does. I said, if you look at page two, there's a box that says banking transactions. And I said, if you, not that I'm telling you to do this, but if you read the provisions of the general obligations law, there is a lengthy statutory interpretation of what that means, banking transactions. And among those is access to a safe deposit box. I said so. So if I send her in there on Monday morning with an attorney-certified copy of the power of attorney, because it was made like 12 years ago, can she get into the box? And she finally said,
she should be able
yes.
to, because under the new law, you can hold the bank responsible, right, for...
It's a New York statutory short form power of attorney. We did it in our office.
Right.
I know it's, you know, it's it's the good one that the bank has to honor. It's not an unusual form from somewhere mm-hmm. else. Right. So, you know, a heads up, though. So
yeah, that's
and then she says to me, well, is she going to have to get in there a lot? I mean, I'm like, why would it matter?
It doesn't matter.
She went in there once or she went in there six times.
If you're allowed in, you're allowed in, right?
So I said to the power of attorney, I said, you know what? While you're in there getting the stock certificates,
get everything.
Let me give you a heads up. Why don't you just clean out the box? Okay. Because, you know, most people, the stuff they have in their safe deposit boxes, they probably don't need to be paying 50 or 75 bucks a year for a box. I mean, unless you're storing gold bullion or cash or, you know, or something. I mean, you don't need a safe deposit box for your deed, you know, deed to your house. Or the worst thing is, don't ever put your original will in a safe deposit
that's right.
box because that's really a mess to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
I know you know.
I've had to go through that where you have to go.
I don't know what you have to do. You have to get a.
You have to get an order from
special dispensation from somebody.
And you have to go to the safe deposit. I actually did this. It was for my father-in-law, which is
okay.
crazy. So I had to go to the bank with the attorney and the bank officer, and we were all escorted down. They opened the safe deposit box, and they were all standing there. And we could only take out the will.
You could only take out the will, nothing else,
nothing
right?
else. There was other papers and jewelry in there, and we couldn't touch it. You had to take out the will.
It's a real problem because what we have, and in most, as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, one of our primary goals as your attorney is to avoid probate if we can avoid it. And it makes sense to do that. It doesn't, you know, maybe it doesn't mm-hmm. always make sense. And invariably, we get down to a point sometimes where nothing is probatable, nothing has to be done except the darn safe deposit box.
That's right.
You can't, because mom's name, or dad's name is the only name in the box. And some of the banks, even if you have if you're a deputy, forget it. Your deputy's access dies with mm-hmm. the person who owns the box. It's just like a power of attorney. After you pass away, it isn't any good anymore, right?
Yeah, that's right. The deputy is, it's like your power of attorney, right?
Right. It's an agent to access the box, but once the principal dies, the agent no longer has any authority. And I've seen banks where even if someone is on as a joint owner, the bank will freeze the box when one person dies. That shouldn't happen legally. These are internal. Every bank has different rules and regulations. Then what do we have to do?
Well, we had that case where it was a joint owner, and the husband had died, and the wife was trying to get in. So it was just like you did. We had to call the bank, tell them what the law was on that. You know, go to a supervisor level to get this woman into the safe deposit box. But I agree. I don't think you need a safe deposit box. A lot of people put their papers in there, but your deed you could always get at the county clerk's office.
Like if you lost your original deed and it's recorded at the county clerk's office, no big deal.
Right.
You can always get a certified copy.
You don't need the original.
Copies of your mortgage discharge, if it's been paid off and recorded. You don't need that on file. Most people don't have priceless jewels and they're storing in a box, but, you know, I don't know. It's a continuing dilemma that the banking industry hasn't really adequately dealt with. I don't know. In many situations, I know in my own family, when my mother was alive, she lived in Pennsylvania. Her safe deposit box, years ago, I put in my name and my sister's name. Mm-hmm. Okay? We owned the box. My mother was the deputy. Okay. So she had the keys and she was in, you know, she lived like three blocks from the bank. So she could, but when she passed away, us went in, it was our box. She had no legal interest in the box. It wasn't a problem. Now, obviously, you have to trust your kids that they're not going to go down and clean out the box if you've got a lot of old, you know. But what most people have in the box.
Not worth anything.
Not worth anything. So. 476-5900 is our number here. And live in the studio, that's 518-476-5900.
So, Harry, I know you were in Kingston this week, and you know how I know?
How did you know? Because I came back with a big bag of baked goods from the bakery across. We have Dicing's bed. I won't. The bakery right across the street from our office in Kingston. And, oh, my heavens. So they have chocolate eclairs that
I
will knock your socks off.
I saw you, three of those. They look.
I ate the second one last night.
You did.
And they make it. Oh, they make this most incredible apple strudel, and it's an old German bakery, bread. And we moved our Kingston office a couple of months ago. We were previously up by the Ulster County Airport, which is kind of right by the Rhinecliff Bridge, practically. And now we're. Now we're downtown in Uptown K-Town, I think it's called, where all the old historic Revolutionary War buildings are. And the bakery's right across the street. So I mean, I'm just...
This is funny because Harry wasn't going to go to Kingston anymore. And then suddenly learned we're across the street from the bakery. And
well, we were. And I did there. Because I have some... there was a client there who I have been doing some work for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just, as a special comment, I said, sure, I'll come down. And it was, you know, it was good. And my chance to stop at the bakery. So.
Well, you better load up while you're down there.
The other thing, let me tell you something. The other thing is, one of the things, because we were talking about, one of the things in this family, this particular family had a son who had recently turned 18. All right, and I'm doing some revisions to the parents' estate planning documents, but I said, look, you know, your youngster here is now legally an adult. 18 is the, and I know,
right? I know.
You have kids who are legally adults, right?
Only legally adults. I wouldn't call them adults.
Well, they're legally adults. And I said, even if they don't have any, you have to get a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy, because if God forbid something happens, these kids get injured or they get sick, you have limited parental authority medically with respect to emergency treatment,
right?
And you might actually have to go get a guardianship for your own kid,
right? You have limited access to information from their doctors, so you need to have that.
Well, I know you can't even see their college grades unless they authorize you to. Is that true? Even though you're writing the tuition check?
Absolutely true. I've never seen a transcript. I'm relying on their word.
That's very interesting. But they are. All right, our first caller here is Robert in Albany. Hey, Robert, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I try to listen to your show every week. I just had a couple questions. I'm finally giving a call in.
Great.
I'm 42. Well, I'll be 42 this year. I got hurt on the job, and the judge retired me. So I'm 75% retired, 25% disabled. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, is this for workers' comp, or is it Social Security disability, or what are you?
It's workers' comp, I believe. Or no, I'm sorry, it's Social Security disability. I went to 500 Federal in Troy, 500 Federal Street in Troy, where they denied me the first time, and I went and I received or I got a lawyer and.
They always deny you the first time. That's routine with Social Security. They always deny you the first time. You have to go through the. We don't do workers' comp or Social Security disability applications, but I know there is a procedure where you can be deemed partially disabled, not 100% disabled, and then
right.
So, but you would still be receiving those things, right? Yeah.
Yep. It's been since 2007 I've been receiving them, my benefits. But my question is, you know, I'm getting a little older in age. My children, I have close to $600 going to my daughter. If anything were to happen to me before I reach the age of retirement or before she reaches 18,
right.
Would my money still go to my daughter, you know?
Yes, it would go to her until she becomes 18. That I think I've had a client in that situation, but it ends when she turns 18.
Okay, and I also have a 5-year-old son with autism, so he should be taken care of until he's 18, also. Yeah. Or
yes, yeah, both of your children should be able to claim under your benefits.
Right. Yeah, okay. Even if you're, even if you're deceased. I mean, if you're certainly if alive, but even
if
you're deceased. They would still be entitled to those benefits, and he, of course, may be entitled to other types of benefits if he has, you know, if he's medically disabled. There could be Medicaid benefits or other things.
Right. Yeah. Once he reaches 18, he will be getting his own benefits.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's what they said. So, okay, I just wanted to make sure that my children would be taken care of if, God forbid, something were to happen to me before. I'm only 42, but a lot of people in my family are in their early 50s, so I need to make sure they're going to be taken care of.
Well, and you should make sure that you have an up-to-date estate plan as well as whatever the benefits are in terms of any assets you have, a house or other retirement benefits or things like that. So, you know, it's important to make
when
sure
should I think
in order. And we've been talking about like things like power of attorney and healthcare policies for somebody with a disability. Healthcare representation is really important down the road, and also, you know, depending on what the nature of the disability, you could need someone at some point who would be in a position to manage your disability benefits and make sure all of your obligations and bills get paid. So really
okay,
important,
yeah.
Especially when you have minor kids, you know.
If I was to pass away and my wife is still with us now, but we do have a house and we do have a little bit of property. Should I think about already putting someone else on the deed for when my kids turn of age, or would that go right to them?
Well, I think what you got to do is probably make an appointment, come in for a consultation. It's a little too complex to discuss on the radio, but certainly, yes, there are a number of different considerations for someone who has already a disability. There could be some asset protection planning that we would want to discuss,
right?
Depending on the kind of disability. And the other thing is, you and your wife, you've got at least two minor children. should make sure you have wills that appoint a guardian for them if, God forbid, something happened to both of you before they reach the age of 18. Who would you like? Who should be in charge of raising your kids and managing their money, okay, and making sure that those continuing disability benefits get properly applied so they have access to education, health care, and things like that? And because, you know, what happens if you don't do those things, maybe somebody in your family thinks they're more appropriate. Maybe somebody in your wife's family thinks they're more appropriate. And frankly, the two of you are the ones who ought to make that decision, not somebody else. And certainly not some judge down in Albany County who, if you can't agree, that's the person who's going to select the guardian for your kids. So, it's a ripe time for an estate planning conversation.
Yes. Yeah, especially 42 and, issues happening. Another question I have for you is, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. If it comes back to me, I'll give you another call.
If it comes back, give us a call. We'll be here till 9 o'clock. All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
518-476-5900. You want to be our next caller?
You know, you didn't mention to him, it is a free consultation.
Oh, yes, it is.
So he should know that, too, going into it. It's, you know, he gets to talk for an hour and discuss all his stuff and everything.
Mm-hmm. Myself, right. David, you know.
That's right. You don't put him in a headlock when they come in. It's a free consultation that he can figure out what to do next.
Exactly.
So I just wanted to make sure that he knew that, because I don't think you mentioned it, so.
No, I think we sometimes just forget about it because it's so automatic.
Well, me being a client, of course, I would mention.
Well, I think one of the reasons, as you say, one of the reasons people hesitate about going to see a lawyer because they think, "Oh my God, I'm going to get a bill. I'm going to get a bill for a couple hundred dollars."
As Dave would say, it depends.
That's right. It depends.
Everything law depends. You know, for every rule of law, there are 12 exceptions. Definitely. So, 4518. 476-5900 is our number here in the studio if you'd like to talk to us. It's
42 is not too young to start planning.
Have young kids. I mean, this is the thing. Everybody thinks, oh, God, I'm 50 now or I'm 60 now. No, it's time to really think about these. Well, it certainly is if you're 50 or 60 now. But if you're just a young couple with minor kids, even if you don't have, you know, all heck a lot of money. You got a house with a big mortgage on it and maybe a couple of $1,000 socked away in a bank and but you might have, at 42, you could have a nice little nest egg in some type of a retirement account or a 401k.
Or life insurance
and
policies.
What do you want to have? You can't put you don't want to put a 5-year-old kid as the beneficiary of an IRA.
That's right. And good morning. We have Jean from Scatico.
Morning.
Hello.
Hi, Jean. You're on the air.
I have a question. My husband has passed away, and I have loads of bills and all the papers and everything because he was sick for about 4 years. I was wondering, should I keep those papers, or can I burn them, or do I shred them, or what? What do I do with them?
So you're talking about bills and medical bills and such?
And the hospital bills, yes, and everything, yeah.
And were they all paid or covered?
Yes, they're all paid.
If they're covered by health insurance, it's been 4 years. I wouldn't keep them anymore.
Should I have shred them, or can I just throw them in the?
Well, I'm cautious. I would shred them.
Shred them.
Oh, I have them for a whole year. Oh, 4 years. Wow. Okay. Thank you then.
Yeah, I would. You're welcome. Okay. Thanks for listening. I would.
I don't trust getting your.
Listen, shredding is the preferred method. Right. I mean, we have, I don't know, three huge shredder boxes in our office. Once a week, this truck comes up, and the boxes, and they grind them, everything up. You can go down and watch them if you want to watch them, if you don't think they're actually shredding the stuff. But let me tell you something. There is a significant amount of post-death credit and health care fraud, okay? I personally have a situation in my own family where a person died and 6 months later got a bill from an emergency room in Lake Placid, New York for that person's emergency treatment at the hospital for about $1,800. Mm-hmm. Okay? I called up the hospital and I said, that person wasn't there because they had died 6 months prior to that. Wow. And I sent them the health insurance card, the death certificate, and right. they profusely apologized. So they were obviously mm-hmm. right off the bill. Someone had gotten this person's health. Now, I'm not talking about your social security number or the password or your bank account number. This was their health insurance ID number from a local health, you know, big health insurance company. And went around fraudulently making health charges on this person's ticket. So it happens. I know personally from personal experience. So it's really important when a person dies, we want to cancel their credit cards. And don't call the 800 customer service number. Write on the back of that credit card bill with all that fine print that you probably need a magnifying glass to read if your eyes are as good as mine. All right? There is an address, and you write there. Please be advised that John Doe died on such and such a date. A photocopy. You don't have to send him an original. Send him a photocopy of the death certificate. Please cancel the account immediately and send me written confirmation that that has happened. Period. Okay? Then it's even if you have an outstanding balance on the bill, you could have a $5,000 balance on the bill. You can still cancel the account. Mm-hmm. It doesn't wipe out the bill. You still got to pay the bill, but it eliminates the ability for someone to commit credit fraud and continue to make additional charges on that bill. I have a situation right now with a client who's in a nursing home in New York City. Her sister, who is her power of attorney, called me last week. I just wrote a letter to the credit card company. There were $1,500 of charges on this woman's charge card last month from three liquor stores and five grocery stores
while she was in the nursing home.
Brooklyn and the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, this woman's sitting up in West 78th Street. Believe me, she ain't going anywhere. I'm not aware that they deliver liquor to nursing homes. Perhaps they do. If you just call, they bring it to them. I'm not sure. So I'm pretty sure these are all fraudulent charges. And again, here's the thing with the power of attorney. The client's sister called. The power of attorney called the credit card company and said, I am her power of attorney. These are fraudulent charges. Please cancel the card. Freeze the card. And they said, oh, you can't do that with power of attorney.
Oh, again, another power of attorney.
Another power of attorney misinterpretation by some phone clerk at a credit card company. So she called me. I wrote a letter that the credit card company will receive on Monday telling them, boom, here's the power of attorney. Here's the charges. If there are any, don't worry about it because we're not going to pay them anyway. And frankly, she's in a nursing home on Medicaid, so believe me, she had no financial ability to pay them even if they were proper charges.
That's true.
Because her allowance is $50 a month. So, there you have it.
All right, we're at 8:30 right now. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And Jay Marie and I are two of the attorneys here at the law firm. We're here, some combination of the group of us are here each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock to chat with you, talk with you. Had a pretty good, lively discussion so far the first half hour. And going on, I think, you know, one of the things that is so important, and one of the big aspects of what we do in our law practice is helping people with the Medicaid application process. Initially, we do a lot of the planning. We set up asset protection trusts for people, and we work with them over a period of time to protect their major assets and major resources and things. Down the road, then, the other important aspect of our law practice is when a person has to apply for either nursing home Medicaid or chronic care, you know, at home care Medicaid, that's a whole other separate process. And it's really a legal process. It's not just filling out a form, right?
Oh, no. It's more than filling out the form. It's a complicated process. You have to know your financials. We have a social worker who works with us because that's an important part of it. You need to know which of the many programs to apply to under Medicaid and which would be the best for you. And Kim helps figure that out. You may need a pool trust for your income. Sometimes it's a whole team. There's a lot of pieces going on involving getting someone on community Medicaid.
There is. And the other thing is, beyond the preparation, filing the Medicaid application, and gathering the information, for instance, as some of you know out there, when we apply to have Medicaid cover a person who is in a nursing home, chronic care, we have to assemble the last 5 years of their financial picture. Everything you did with your money for the last 5 years, going back now, we would go back to June of 2017. So all the woman that was throwing out the stuff, you know, paid medical bills is one thing, but keep your bank statements, keep all of your financial statements for at least 5 years.
Don't you often get a horrified look when you tell them that?
Yeah, say, oh my God,
five years.
You know, oh my God. Well, my aunt, I don't know, it's such a mess. She and everything. She put everything in the shredder.
Right.
So, okay, not to worry. We will have you sign authorizations, authorizing the law firm on your behalf to obtain the bank statements from the bank. The bank has all the statements. We can get them, and ordinarily in the context of a Medicaid application, they don't charge for them, all right? Some banks will charge you $10 or $15 for every statement you have to reproduce. So if I need 60 statements, that could cost $600 to reproduce the statements. In the context of a Medicaid application, I believe all the banks pretty much provide them.
They generally do that for free.
And also all your investment. If you've got an account at Schwab or Morgan, whatever your favorite brokerage firm is, we need all those statements too. We need 60 months of statements for your IRA, your 401k plan. You know, we need all of your life insurance, cash value of your life insurance. If you have any annuities.
I don't know if you saw, I went by Jessica's office. She's one of our Medicaid paralegals. And there was those giant plastic totes?
Yes.
Full of paper in front of her desk. And right. And that's what she has to go through.
That might just be one or two Medicaid applications.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why you need someone to help you go through that and sort out all those papers, see what transactions they're asking about. It's pretty complicated. It's tough.
Well, and besides just filling out the application and piling up the paperwork, most of these applications involve either transferring assets to a trust to someone else or liquidating assets, selling stocks, bonds, liquidating an annuity. All of these things have tax consequences beyond whatever the Medicaid stuff is. And if you use somebody who is not an attorney and not an attorney who has lots of experience doing these things, you're just asking for trouble. I mean, there are companies out there, non-lawyer, there are companies out there, frankly, there are companies out there who are employed, who are hired by hospitals and nursing homes to fill out your Medicaid application.
And I'm sure you've heard this many times. I have too, where a client liquidated their IRA to pay the nursing home bill.
Yeah. In fact, in some instances, I'm aware that the nursing home actually told the client to liquidate and spend the money in the IRA before they applied for Medicaid. That's
a shame.
Well, it's more than a shame. If it was a lawyer who told them that, yes, it would probably constitute malpractice.
That's right.
Because your IRA or your 401k or your 403b, whatever your qualified retirement account is, in New York, is a non-countable resource. You don't have to spend the entire amount paying for your nursing home. You're going to have to spend some of it, depending on what your other income is. But the idea that this is a good thing to do, and now this woman has spent down her husband's $150,000 IRA, which lasts about 10 months, and now she's going to do Medicaid application. Well, that's really...
Right.
That's a shame that you got really bad, incompetent advice.
You don't have to spend down the whole IRA. You only have to take out a certain amount every month. And you can leave the balance of that IRA to your children. So you don't have to, you know, leave nothing to your children. If you have an IRA or 401k, you can still leave that to your kids, even if you're on Medicaid.
Yeah, you could be on Medicaid for 3 years or 5 years. And if you got, you know, one time I had a guy, he had like $800,000 in his IRA. And we got him on Medicaid. Now, he had to take about $43,000 a year out of the and give that toward his nursing home care. But when he died, there was still about $600,000 or $700,000 left. He had been on Medicaid for 3 or 4 years, and guess what? The IRA went to his wife or his children. It didn't go back to the county, and it didn't go to the nursing home. Those assets are, first of all, in New York and under federal bankruptcy laws. Those assets are exempt from creditors' claims, not just the nursing home, you know, anybody else you owe money to. If your bank forecloses on your mortgage and you still owe them money, they can't take your IRA, you know.
Right.
That's what O.J. Simpson's living on, you know, since, you know.
As well as his mansion in Florida.
And he probably bought it with, you know, and he's got a homestead exemption for his mansion in Florida.
That's right.
That is exempt from creditors' claims as well. We don't have that kind of an exemption.
Not New York.
In New York. But, you know, I mean, I probably told this story over the years that O.J. had about, $4 or $5 million in his qualified retirement plan from the Buffalo Bills when he played with them. And then he had another $2 or $3 million he accumulated when he used to go flying through the airports with Hertz. You know, when he used to... I mean, this is probably 25.
Jump over luggage and run through the airport,
and all those qualified retirement accounts during the years he was out in Vegas in prison, they just kept accumulating and accumulating tax deferred. I do know a couple of years ago he turned 70 and a half or 72, so he now has to take minimum distributions from those accounts now. So the RMDs, once they come out, are no longer exempt from your... If you got to take $100,000 out of your IRA this year, once it's out of there in your checking account, it's no longer protected from creditors. But in the meantime, it's sitting there. And now, interestingly enough, that isn't true everywhere. Jane Marie, of course, has a fondness for Massachusetts. And,
I do for now. But
Massachusetts.
I like that.
When I'm getting close to a nursing home, I'll have to move out of the state.
You're going to have to come. You know, this is what I tell my wife. Because in Massachusetts and down where I have a winter house down in North Carolina, guess what? If you go to a nursing home in those two states and you apply for Medicaid, your IRA is not exempt. You have to spend it down before you're eligible to go on Medicaid to pay the nursing home. So I tell my wife, boy, if you ever got to bring me back to New York.
Go back to New York. Mm-hmm.
Put
That's
me
right.
in
yeah.
one year. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right.
I'll just be considered where found, you know.
We had an off-air question.
Sure.
Explain the difference between a charitable lead trust and a charitable remainder trust.
Ooh. Oh. Oh, somebody here is trying to tax our...
Let me put it this way. The phone call said Lake Placid, and I thought it was the hospital calling you.
Oh, that's the bell.
Maybe it's somebody... Kate Smith's estate. Kate Smith, remember Kate?
Yeah, sure. God bless America.
She's buried in Lake Placid. Yeah. Yes.
Really?
She had Lake Placid for years. When I was a kid, I used to go up there in the 1950s. My grandmother had a friend who belonged to the old Lake Placid Club, and we'd go up there summers in August, and she was still alive then.
You literally know everyone, don't you?
I didn't know Kate Smith. I saw her in a concert one time. She was a very large woman. She could have been an opera singer, I think. She may have been an opera singer. Anyway. Jane Marie, by the way, has... She doesn't talk about this very often, but she not only is an exceptional attorney, but she has a tax and accounting background that brings a level of depth to our firm that we would not otherwise have.
Wow.
Were she not here. So I'm going to let her take the lead on this
the trust question.
Nice
trust.
Segue, Harry. That's beautiful.
Nice. So overall, the reason you want to do one of these trusts is to, of course, give money to charity, but you're doing that in a way where you're going to get a tax deduction that's going to offset your estate taxes or your income taxes, but you're also going to still give some money to your family. So there's two ways to do it. You know, the more common way is a charitable remainder trust,
mm-hmm.
where you put money in the trust and you yourself or you and your spouse receive back an annuity for your lifetime. And then when you both pass, the money goes to the charity. So it's a nice way to create like a retirement stream for yourself, but have a charitable deduction when the money goes to the charity at the end.
Right.
Now, the charitable lead trust, not as common, but you can do it. Let's say you didn't need the income, right, but you wanted to give money to your grandchildren. So you would set up a charitable lead trust where the charity gets the money for X number of years or your lifetime. And then after that term ends, what's left in that trust goes to your grandchildren.
Back to the family.
Yeah, back to the family. So two ways of doing it kind of depends on what your, you know, what your goals are. But it's a really nice way to give money to charity and get yourself a tax deduction.
You do. You know who I remember reading had done a number of charitable lead trusts when she died was Jackie Kennedy, Jackie Onassis. Mm-hmm. She set up a number of charitable lead trusts. It was kind of interesting because the charities would, as you say, they get the money initially. However, it's divvied out, and then of course down the road it goes back to the family. Now at that time, I mean, she had obviously her son died in a plane crash. He had no children, so at the end of the lead would go back to Caroline Kennedy or her. She is a bunch. She's 3 or 4 kids, I think, doesn't she?
Yeah.
The more common thing people do is the charity, which is called the charitable remainder trust, where the charity gets the money at the end, the remainder. And you can set it up as a joint annuity or a single, or we could even set it up with a parent and a child. I've done them. Where the parent and an adult child are the joint annuitants for the measuring lives, and then you take out a certain percentage. I mean, there's there are subcategories of charitable remainder trusts also, and I won't bore you with the details of those things. But you know, because this tax stuff tends to put people to sleep. But the nice thing about doing that while you're alive is, so let's say you put $100,000 in a charitable remainder trust, okay? And I reserved, 4% of it. I'd take 4% of it a year for the rest of my life. So the money's invested, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, I get, so that's a $4,000 a year annuity. I'm basically setting up the equivalent of almost a private annuity for myself. Down the road when I die, whatever's left in that goes to one or more of my favorite charities, okay? And usually you can set the document up so that if over time you could change the charities as long as they're 501c3 tax-exempt charities. And then up front, immediately I get a tax deduction on my income tax return. Now, it's not $100,000. I put $100,000 into the trust, okay? But I don't get $100,000 deduction because I'm reserving the annuity for my lifetime. Well, the money that I pay to myself, I'm not a tax-exempt charity. Below.
That's no, I'm not. You're not. No.
So that part isn't deductible. So what we do is, what do? We go to actuarial tables of life expectancy and figure out how much at my age, what the 4% is likely to be, what the remainder is. But I might get a $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 tax deduction. Now, Jane Marie is considerably younger than I am, so if she set up a charitable remainder trust at her age, the deduction would be smaller because her life expectancy is longer than mine. Okay. And so that's kind of how it works. And so people can get a nice current deduction if they don't need the money currently. They want to benefit a charity, but they also want to benefit their families.
Right.
It's nicer than just writing a check for $100,000 to a charity. So it's a great planning device.
Right.
You can also set them up inside. You could set them up, I guess, inside a will or a trust.
Sure, to take effect on
your set aside a certain amount of money that would run for the life of somebody else, create an annuity for one of your kids. Sometimes people will do this if they have children who are, say, financially irresponsible, and they need to have, if they got the 100,000 or a million all at once, it would be quickly dissipated. So we want to dole it out over a period of time. And that's one way to do it and also receive some charitable bump down the road.
Does a charity know, when you create the trust, does a charity know right off the bat, or do they find out once you pass?
It depends.
Okay.
Most large charitable organizations have their own forms already ready for you for charitable remainder trusts. Okay. And one of the reasons to do them is, I had a client one time who had, he had a boatload of Disney stock, okay, that he'd bought like 50 years ago, very, very low cost basis. And he put the money in the charitable remainder trust, okay? So the appreciated stock goes in there. He gets a tax deduction. If he bought it for $5 a share and now it's worth 105, he gets a tax deduction for the fair market value when he puts it in the trust, no matter what he paid for it. The charity then, on the other hand, you can sell the stock down the road, and they don't pay any capital gains taxes because they're tax exempt.
That's right.
So it's a wonderful way to move appreciated assets that would otherwise be taxable to someone into a non-taxable situation, and really everybody wins other than possibly the IRS, I suppose.
Well, that's okay.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing right. that I can think of.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
Nothing
so.
That I can think okay. of. I mean, they take enough.
Can't imagine that you would be advocating for them, so that's a good thing.
You know, Uncle is always in your pocket, picking your pocket. And he, you know, any time they... Okay. Next quarterly installment is due. September.
That's funny. In all the years I've been doing this, I had one client. We were trying all these things to save him estate taxes. He didn't care. He's like, I don't care. I'll pay the taxes to the government. I mean, that's like one out of everyone I've done. Most people are
occasionally
trying to avoid the taxes.
Right? Occasionally this happens. They say, you know what? I don't really care. I know there's a large estate tax that will have to be paid.
Right.
I don't really care because at the end of the day, there's still going to be plenty of money left for everyone.
Right.
Now, most of us are not in that situation.
Most of us are not like that.
Most of us don't have to worry about estate taxes for the most part. But anyway, 518-476-5900 is our number here in the studio. That's 518-476-5900. We got about 10 minutes left.
I am going to jump in here with our webinar schedule. It's not next week. It's the week after. But you can plan ahead. Monday, June 20th at 2 o'clock, we have legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease. And then the next day, Tuesday, June 21st, we don't have a webinar, and there's a good reason for that. June 21st is the Alzheimer's Association. It's called The Longest Day, and it's one of their big fundraisers because it is the longest day of the year. And they say that for caregivers, you know, it's always the longest day. They're always, you know.
Also the first official day of summer.
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So we, as a firm, are doing some fundraising and goodwill in the community. And we are going to Shaker Place Nursing Home and planting or donating, I should say, three flower beds, with those raised beds. So people,
nice.
So that's very nice. So the firm will be out doing that. So there's no webinar that day.
Are you planting the flowers, or are they?
We have raised flower beds that we're donating. And yes, all of us, we're going to bring dirt. Harry, you can bring
You didn't get the memo that you need your gardening gloves there, Harry?
Gardening gloves and your spade or whatever.
Harry will just buy lunch afterwards, so don't worry about it. It's all good.
Gardening for, you know, for
100 years.
Oh, heavens, yes.
Well, then you will take the lead on that day, okay?
No, sorry, he's got to go to Kingston that day. Sorry.
And then on Wednesday, June 22nd, our webinar is How Not to Pay for Services. That's one
What's that about? How not to pay for
What kind of services?
So how not to pay for services, I didn't read the next part. Long-term care solutions. So it's what resources are in the community that can help you stay in the community, help you, you know, with your long-term care needs. And Kim Hance does that, and it's really great because she knows a lot of resources in the community.
Well, let me just give you an example of something that happened this week. I have a client who was in, you know, recently to sign. I signed some papers and stuff like that, and she had some health issues over the last year, and she needs not a whole lot of care, but a little bit of care. And so I was talking to her. I said, you know, we might be able to get you qualified for the community Medicaid program to get some home care services through Medicaid, because she's currently privately paying. And has, you know, the person has on a limited income. So I said, let's talk about it. So this and that and the other thing. So the other day I had a conversation with her and one of her kids. And so we talked about that in the process. And so here's the situation, Jay Marie. I would say she may be borderline eligible because, among other things, in addition to the income, you have to, unless you have a dementia diagnosis, which this person doesn't have, you have to lack two of the five activities of daily living. And I'm not a person that's qualified to assess that, but in talking to her and seeing her, I think she may be borderline, okay? So what I said to the family was, hey, listen, before we go ahead and start this process and you spend the money to pay us to do the application, let's have Kim get in touch with you, because she's a certified care manager, and she can make the preliminary evaluation. You know, it's not, I mean, it's certainly not guaranteed, but she can tell you if she thinks you're going to qualify down the road when they come to do the assessment. Because if you're not, maybe we ought to wait 6 months or a year until you need more care, rather than going through this process and having it approved financially and then finding out you're not going to get care, or you're going to get, you know, 3 hours a week, which isn't really going to help you very much.
That's right. And that's what's great about meeting with Kim is, you know, she can meet with you. She can assess that. And let's say she determines you're not quite ready for Medicaid yet. She does have these other resources she can offer you where to find help in the community. Maybe this woman needs help with, you know, meals or transportation.
Well, that's the thing, because she doesn't drive, you know, for instance, she doesn't drive anymore. So she doesn't, like, if she comes to my office, she has to get somebody to drive her to the office. She isn't, you know, she isn't doing that anymore. But driving is not an activity of daily living either, you know. I mean, other things like, you know, dressing yourself, bathing yourself, going to the bathroom, taking your medicine. I mean, those are things that probably at this point, for the most part, she could still do. So it may not be appropriate, but the point of it is here, rather than rushing around, we're trying to help the folks in the community that are our clients to really make an evaluation here as to whether this is the appropriate time, and then we can stay on top of it. When they come back in 6 months or a year, we say, okay, fine. So we can start getting the information together, but hold off on the on the other. And I think that's, you know, hopefully a service that is
It's important to our clients.
I think it is.
Right. And it's different because not every law firm has a social worker who works with them to help the clients.
Well, almost none of them. I mean, very few of them do. But no, most of the, you know, and the other thing is, this is a highly specialized area of practice where we have been working for a long, long time. And there are, you know, a handful of other fam in the Capital District. But for the most part, and this is a difference between, if people sort of ask, what's the difference between an elder law attorney and an estate planning attorney? Okay, well, an elder law attorney does these kinds of things that we're talking about. They deal with senior citizens who are housing issues, Medicaid issues, home care issues, those sorts of things. An estate planning attorney who doesn't do those things will draft wills and trusts and documents, and they are extremely good at it, and they are very, very, very competent to do those things. But many of them don't deal with the life transitional problems that an elder law attorney does. And so I guess that's what distinguishes us.
That's right. So just the last two, going to get these in here quickly. The last two webinars, Thursday, June 23rd, we have wills versus trusts. That's always a popular one. And on Friday, June 24th, we have estate planning for young families.
Ah.
And this is really important. We all do this all the time. But as we were talking about earlier, when you have children, minors, and you want to appoint a guardian for them, for example, that's an important thing to think about. Setting up trusts for your young children so they don't get the money when they're 18. So it's really important to have an estate plan when you're young as well as when you're, you know, retiring.
It's not just for old people. Seriously. I mean, really, we talked about this earlier in the hour. It's really a young family. You don't have a boatload of money. You got a lot of debt and very little equity in your house. But you got young kids. We have to plan for these kids. Whatever you do have has to go. We have to set up a little trust for children who are minors. We have to talk about who's going to manage the people that are going to, if God forbid something happens to you, maybe the people that are going to raise the children and nurture them and make sure that their personal needs may not be the same people that manage their financial needs. It could be two different people. Very often it's the same person, but it doesn't have to be. And there may be different people in one spouse's family or another spouse's family, and we got to pick and choose and make decisions. And it's critically important because otherwise, what a mess people can leave behind them if they just this just really isn't that hard to do. It requires planning and focus, and getting through the process. So we're here to help you. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.